So,
and why Elon Musk is trying to have so many children, at least 14 at this point, but he's actually explicitly texted it saying, we've got to do this much faster, as he proposed to one of the women he has children with, saying, we got to start using surrogates.
So they don't believe in the future, is the bottom line. And that is, you know, I think I've been in a lot of progressive spaces in recent months where we've talked about building these very broad coalitions, including with people who we don't entirely disagree with. I've never encountered a potential coalition more broad than the idea of, how about if we believe in this world? How about if we believe in the future? Because we're up against people who are actively betting against the future, right? Not just actively betting against it, but fueling the fires that are burning this world, actively fueling it. So I think that if we have the courage really to look at the bleakness of what they believe in, which is an apocalyptic future, then we have our work cut out for us of being the people who actually believe in this realm, in this world, in the beauty of creation and in of each other.
Naomi Klein, I want to thank you for being with us. Award-winning journalist, author, columnist. We'll link to your piece with Astra Taylor, The Rise of End Times Fascism. I'm Amy Goodman. This is Democracy Now!
This is Bill McKibben coming at you on KBOO, Portland, Oregon.
Prison Pipeline is a radio program dedicated to educating the public about the Oregon criminal justice system. Topics include incarceration and reentry, addictions and mental health, elections and laws, victims' rights, and criminal justice reform. The program presents a unique understanding of the criminal justice system, addresses the root causes of crime, and challenges the status quo. It seeks to promote awareness and activism in order to foster a safer, healthier, and more just society.
Prison Pipeline airs on Monday evenings from 6:30 to 7 p.m. on KBOO Portland. Check us out every week. If you miss an episode, you can stream it later. Just go to kboo.fm/prisonpipeline. More info about upcoming shows and events related to the prison community can be found on our Facebook page, Prison Pipeline. Be sure to like us.
Good morning. You are listening to More Talk Radio on your community radio station, KBOO FM. Broadcasting 90.7 in Portland, 104.3 in Corvallis, 91.9 in Hood River, and via the World Wide Web, it is kboo.fm. Today is Monday, the 5th of May, in the year 2025. It is 8:02 a.m., and I am Cecil Prescott. I will be your host this morning. Thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate you taking the time to start off your Monday, start off your week by participating in this community forum. Let me give you our phone numbers so that you may call in and share your wisdom as the program continues. Our phone numbers are 503-231-8187. 503-231-8187. Well, thank you all for joining us this morning. And for those of you who are listening live, we had the opportunity to hear an interview of Naomi Klein on Democracy Now! Talking about the modern state of fascism, what it is, how it differs, and where we are as a world, in terms of the direction of our future. And it may appear very, very bleak to many, many people. And that's something we should talk about in terms of what people can do and what people are doing to to resist this worldview that is so dominant in so much of our lives today, and how people may resist it and move forward beyond that. There are things that we can do and things that we ought to do. This last week, we acknowledged, 100 days of Trump 2. And that is monumental in our nations, indeed in the world's history. But this past week, we also saw on May Day, thousands of people in Portland flooding Pioneer Courthouse Square for May Day International Workers' Day rally. There were many, many gatherings in this region at PSU, at Pioneer Square, at Terry Strunk Plaza, throughout the city, downtown. There were people gathering and protesting and letting their positions be made known, protesting the Trump administration, and among the things, the mass and chaotic firings of federal employees, the forced deportations of people out of the United States, people who are here, mass deportation without due process, protesting against the proposed tariffs, acknowledging the threat of that many communities face, the movement of trans erasure, the threat to reproductive rights, and so much more. So among the things I wanted to talk about is people's reflections on where we are, and how do, hearing the interview with Naomi Klein this morning, reminded me of what we are involved in, and how the state of the world is at risk, what direction we want to go. So how do we respond? And I had a conversation with a friend of mine who's been doing so much work in recent weeks in terms of trying to struggle back against this oppressive regime we are in right now. And she mentioned to me that she's just experiencing compassion fatigue. And we can talk about that a little bit more, about what are the signs of compassion fatigues, and what do we do about it, and what are there signs of hope? So let's participate in this morning conversation and hear some of your thoughts. Again, our numbers are 503-231-8187. Did you participate in the protest rallies, the actions last week, and how do you combat or resist compassion fatigue? And where do you see signs of hope? Let's go to those who are waiting. Let's go to our first caller this morning. Good morning.
Good morning. Pastor Prescott, I really like the idea that we begin the week. I'm getting a lot of echo feedback, but can you hear me correctly?
I can hear you.
You can?
Yes, you are.
I like the idea that we begin the week with Pastor Prescott. Now, whatever your issues are, whatever, call in. If you still have some time during your hour to affirm that nature and human nature can evolve, improve, solve these problems, and if there is a way to resist despair and destruction, otherizing or scapegoating, or giving up, that we can and we must make a difference. Plus, regardless of what other people do or what evidence we see in nature, being true to our values and working out of love and hope and integrity is what keeps us sane and safe and inspired and aware of the solutions we need. And it's worth it, because if we fit into the fascist belief that there's no hope, we might as well give in and do evil, bad things, then we're on the wrong side of history. I think we need every week to start with, things are bad, and we do have uncomfortable feelings about it, and we can make a difference, and we must, and it's worth the effort. And so that is why I participated in many May Day, May 1st and May 3rd, community gatherings in affirmation of hope.
Excellent.
And that is why I help with various mutual aid groups, or I just individually do things for people that I think are visibly suffering, homeless or otherwise. So it is worth it, and we can make a difference, and we must not dawdle. We need to get with it.
I appreciate what you're saying, and one thing that I will leave our conversation with is your emphasis on hope. There is so much that denies the possibility of hope, and we need to lean into that in terms of our vision of what we want to see and what our world can be. So let's lean into hope. I appreciate your call and your passion. Thank you so much. And you're listening to More Talk Radio here on your community radio station, KBOO FM. Our telephone numbers are 503-231-8187. Among the things I toss out is, did you participate in any actions last week during International Workers' Day? Are you experiencing compassion fatigue, and what is that? How do you experience that? And what are signs of hope? Let's go to our next caller. Santiago is waiting. Good morning.
Good morning, Cecil. I just want to kind of piggyback on what the last caller was talking about, hope, and how, in order to really have hope, we have to see things as they are. And one of the things that, with the actions that I was helping organize this weekend, is helping people recognize that, the current movement that we've got going through, Bernie Sanders and AOC, is not really so much as standing up to oligarchy as much as it is, trying to drag, what leftist fervor might actually be out there. To move further left than the Democrats, to drag it back into the Democratic Party. They're doing a really good job of hyping people up and fundraising. But the fundamental problem is that we would not be in this situation if it wasn't for the collaboration of the Democratic Party. And we just, and part of seeing things as they are is recognizing that we're being asked right now to choose between two right-wing parties. One being a right-wing party of like bald-faced white man's fascism, racism, and another of being corporate fascism.
So let me ask you, because I think I know where you're going. Do you think there's a possibility? There was an editorial in the New York Times, I think it was on May Day, and we're talking about we need, and I think we've had a conversation similar to this before, Santiago. In this New York Times editorial, they was talking about we need this broad coalition of opposition to Trump. And what I'm hearing from you is that of disappointment of saying that just going along, we're doing the same old thing, and it hasn't made any difference in the past. And in fact, that trying to shift the Democrats to more left is ineffective, and we need to do something different. Expand on what you're saying.
Well,
Well, so here's the thing, like, fascism is fascism, and like, when we're talking, like, see, the problem is that Democrats try to make this just about Trump, but every American president has had an emperor within them trying to come out, and what has stopped fascism in the past is actual socialist, communist movements. That's what stopped fascism here in the States. I mean, granted, it led to more of a social democracy, which is better-ish, but it didn't. But it stopped. But that's what stopped fascism here.
Okay, hold on to that. Hold on to that, because you're saying what stopped fascism here in the 1930s was this. It sounds, I mean, from my reading of history, was this corporate America saying, "Oh no, we are in danger, so we have to calm things down." So it sounds as if you're saying what stopped fascism, 90 years ago was this compromise that the Democratic Party did, and it sounds as if you're against anything like that these days. Tell me, how am I misinterpreting what you're saying?
Well, no, it wasn't cooperation with the Democratic Party. It was erecting dual power, meaning a power source outside of the electoral system that grew to such a weight that it could literally push on the center of power.
Okay.
Democrats are really good at one thing, and that is bending to power, whether it is power from the people or power from corporations. They don't have a plan of their own outside of not being the bad guy. So it's creating a dual power structure. We saw it in the 30s with the coalition of communist, socialist, and trade unionists. We saw it in the 60s with the coalition of black and brown power movements, indigenous power movements. You know, we saw people who, and what united the people in the 30s, essentially, and the people in the 60s was having a clear view and understanding of who the enemy is. And, Martin Luther King said it best, America is the greatest purveyor of violence throughout the world.
So, all
of our social reformers, in many ways, especially when we're talking black and brown social reformers, they were seen as fundamentally anti-American in their time. And so all of this talk about trying to save democracy doesn't work, because this has never been a democracy. Now, when you talk about
hold on to that, because I think one of the things that I read in terms of the 60s, in terms of saving democracy, was there was this longing, at least in terms of the quote unquote mainstream, say, civil rights movement, of that America was a country, the ideal was something that we needed and that needed to be saved, and we wanted to participate. I'm talking about black and brown people. We want to be a part of this great American experience. Let us in. Some degree radical, but it was also very reform oriented. It wasn't that we want to destroy the American system. We want to be included in the American system. It's my reading of that.
Well, there were the assimilationists, which, largely represented like Cesar Chavez and Martin Luther King. But then there were also the nationalists, like Malcolm X and Jorge Gonzalez, who fundamentally understood that America is not for us. Mm-hmm. It was like when people talk about, the constitutional problems, the Constitution was erected to protect private property and private profits, period. Yeah, end of story. That's why they had to make the addendum of the Bill of Rights with a push up from the bottom, because people were saying, look, you cannot have all these rules for private property and not have anything else. Because the people who created this country envisioned a white Shangri-La on our shores, on Turtle Island shores.
Right, indeed.
So they did not want, and people say, oh, well, they created this stuff in the event of, like, if the slaves got free, or, you know, the indigenous people weren't being murdered all across the continent, that wasn't the thing. There was white men who fundamentally saw themselves as a part of this project and wanted to be a part of it in a way that excluded other people. That's why the Bill of Rights exists.
Sure.
But Martin Luther King talked about how he, even after all the work that he did, he understood after talking with Malcolm X and, Kwame Ture and a lot of other cats, that he understood that, like, he had assimilated his people into a burning building. That's why Malcolm X was talking human rights over civil rights, because civil rights are for citizens, and we have been paper citizens.
Sure.
Like 60 or 70 years ago, culturally, we've never been accepted.
Would I agree. Let me go back to a point you made earlier in terms of moving forward, and then we have to go on to our next call.
Okay.
You talked about the creation of a dual powers creation in the movement. Explain that a little bit more.
So dual power is essentially erecting a power source that is parallel to the systems of power that we have now. It doesn't mean that it has to be as powerful as it right away, but it means that you're essentially erecting it. And what that consists of, it consists of parties that are fundamentally anti-capitalist, anti-imperialist. That would be your socialist, communist, black and brown nationalist type of organizations,
okay,
where they understand that capitalism is the problem and that inviting more people into a burning building doesn't stop the building from burning.
Okay.
And then you have to have mutual aid programs that are erected within the community to help the community, like medical programs. You have to have, like, food programs. I mean, look at the Brown Berets and the Black Panthers had really good, solid mutual aid programs. In fact, the Brown Berets learned from the Black Panthers.
Okay.
And
hey,
then,
I'm going to have to let you go because we have another caller waiting.
Okay.
But thank you for sharing the information and for sharing your thoughts. Thank you so much, Santiago.
Yeah, no problem.
And you are listening to More Talk Radio here on your community radio station. May Day was last week. What are people doing? How are people feeling? How are you combating compassion fatigue? What are signs of hope? And I believe Sharon had thoughts. Good morning. How are you today?
Good morning. Fine. Thank you. And thank you for your show. This is I think, Santiago, I really like his last comment, because I think real change has to happen. It can't be trying to rebuild, you know, or tweak the system we've had.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a book that I just wanted to pass on. It came out a number of years ago, a couple of years ago, called The Red New Deal. It was a indigenous response to the Green New Deal. And it was talking about, really, to save the planet, we need to be dealing with colonialism and capitalism. And so I just wanted to pass that on.
Do you know the author's name of that book?
You know, I think it was actually put out, I don't know if there's a specific author.
Yeah.
Because it was put out by a tribal, group.
Okay.
I mean,
community.
But it was, so it's called The Red New Deal, Indigenous Action.
Okay.
Okay.
Excellent. Yeah.
It deals more with than just tweaking the system, actually changing the system.
Mm-hmm. So what I'm hearing from you is a sense that instead of, like, in your words, tweaking the system, we just have to create something new and different, that will be, because the current system is just rotten to the core.
Well, to a certain degree, like, the one thing I really liked about the book is, you know, we do a lot of thinking that somehow capitalism is going to be freedom for people. It's like, no, like, their basic economic structure, at least the way it's interpreted and taught, is one that is not fair.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's some things that are wrapped in, like, we do that a lot. Well, we'll have, like, dictatorship, and then we see communism as a kind of dictatorship. Well, communism is an economic system, you know.
Yeah.
We wrap in, put together political systems with economic systems, and they're not, they don't have to be the same. So our capitalism is, I think, what's corrupting all parties that we have right now. And and anyway, I just personally think it's a flawed system in many ways. And so, at least the way it's interpreted and practiced right now. And so I do think there need to be some very, very, very deep changes, and that yes. we can't go back into just like other callers were saying, like, you know, just including everybody. Well, welcome to the party.
Yes, like, no, excellent, excellent.
Right now, it's not going to work.
No,
welcome people, or be more inclusive, or pretend that we're more inclusive.
Excellent.
It's not. It's not a good system.
Right. Hey, I think I might have come across the book you mentioned, The Red Deal, Indigenous Action to Save Our Earth.
And excellent. I'm sorry, I said The Red New Deal. Uh-huh. But yes, The Red Deal.
Great.
Yes.
Great.
Yeah, so I just wanted to put that. It's been out for a few years, but I just wanted to put it out to listeners where they might want to hear some ideas about how the level of change that I personally think needs to happen.
Excellent. Thank you so much, and for sharing that resource to us.
Oh, sure. Thank you, and thanks for your show, and it's good to hear everybody. Thanks.
Great. And thank you, Sharon, who informed us of a resource that we may want to look at, The Red Deal, Indigenous Action to Save Our Earth. Forgive me, it's, you know, Monday morning mouth. Excellent. Thank you so much for that. Our number is 503-231-8187. We've heard from a few of our listeners. Sharon just gave us a book that we should look at and read. Earlier, Santiago shared some of their thoughts in terms of how our society is shaping up and how we should look at creating a dual power system and ways in which we can transform our society. So on this following May Day, when there was so much actions, there's so much going on and so much we need to do. I began this program by affirming or just responding to an interview that Naomi Klein did with Democracy Now!, in which she talked about the state of the world and her analysis of this world fascism, which is unique to our era. And while we can learn, certainly can and ought to learn from the past and the rise of fascism 100 years ago, things are different now in terms of not only the players, but the world itself. One thing that she mentioned, you know, the rise of fascism 100 years ago was before most of the world knew anything about the climate crisis. It was certainly occurred before nuclear weapons. So things have changed, but things remain the same in that a few, powerful few, want to continue to control the many. And so the hope and the struggle of May Day is that the many can find ways in which to build collective power to not only resist but to overcome and to create indeed a new world for all. And one thing that Naomi Klein mentioned in the interview was that so many of those forces of despair that are so powerful right now, because they do not have a sense of hope for the world. Naomi Klein mentioned that the 1920s and the 1930s and the fascism we saw that rose in Europe, and there was a sense that there was creating something better. Naomi Klein observed that so much of those in power now, in terms of the rise of fascism, there isn't any hope. And in fact, there is this mentality that they are all against us and that we have to save ourselves, build a fortress to protect ourselves. And I suspect that that is a powerful force, and we all realize it, that fear is a way in which lead people to do strange things, terrible things to other. But I think we need to counter that by a sense of hope, not a sense of naivete, of just closing our eyes and whistling, but a sense of what we can create and the opportunity. So what is a way in which we acknowledge the world we want to create is by noticing and creating a world in which all are included and offering a different model, and rather one that include rather than exclude. So what are ways in which we can build those worlds together? We heard a couple of callers mention this morning opportunities in which to create new world and new vision. What are some of your thoughts as we continue to struggle against Trump for 100 days and there's a few hundred more days to go? Our numbers here are 503-231-8187, and we'll take your call and hear your thoughts and wisdom. Also, as I mentioned, in terms of the many people who had been protesting last week and asking for signs of hope, what are people's thoughts or signs of hope within their own communities? We heard from Sharon and Santiago both mentioned in terms of how communities are gathering and building, whether it's in mutual aid, and there's a whole sorts of ways and different things that people are doing in their communities that are building a new world that's based on hope. Our numbers are 503-231-8187. And I think we have a couple of callers online, so let me shut up and let's go to the wisdom of our next caller. Good morning. Good morning. You're on the air.
Hi.
Good morning.
Yeah. My name is Lee, and I have been suggesting for a decade or more that as an alternative, there should be matriarchal councils, local, regional, national, continental, worldwide, basically to oppose the insanity of patriarchy, which is the problem that we currently have. Mm-hmm. And you know, patriarchs do not have compassion.
Right. Tell me more about how you came up with this idea of matriarchal council, or how do you see those councils working?
Well, I don't know how they will work. That's up to, you know, the women, but I would like to see, you know, the wisdom of individuals like Celeste, you know, being able to state a direction of how our society should go and what is right and what is wrong and how we spend our money.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? I mean, patriarchy is saturated in the religion, in the economics, in the politics, and we don't have the compassion of women. We don't have the intelligence of women that make up 52% of the world's population.
Yeah.
Let's face it, women need to assert their power and basically councils, I can't form them. I got the wrong anatomy.
Right. Well, thank you.
But let me go one step further. That so many of the tribal nations' policies were matriarchal systems.
Yes. Hey, thank you so much. I appreciate your suggestion, and that's very
good. You can't
do
anything about it, but Celeste might.
Yeah. Well, let's hear from our next caller, who I believe is a woman who has lots of wisdom. So, good morning, Lenita.
Hey, good morning, Cecil. Happy Monday. Happy Cinco de Mayo.
Yes.
And I take hope in the resistance of ordinary people, from the federal employee who refuses to give up personal data, from the scientists who's still at their desk, from everyday people that are resisting. That's where my hope comes from.
Mm.
And from people like you, you know, who've been in the trenches for a long time, resisting and educating, and that gives me hope, as opposed to people just laying down and let stuff happen. I take hope in what happened in the recent elections in Canada and Australia. I take hope in the fact that China is not bending over backwards.
Yes.
On these tariffs. I take hope in just the everyday resistance that we need to overcome this period in American history.
Hmm. One thing you said, a couple of things you said that I want to hold on to. Your last line, the everyday resistance, and also what you said earlier, that ordinary people are doing amazing things in their communities. So, yes.
They really are, and ordinary people are keeping community radio alive. Ordinary people are keeping Pacifica alive. And ordinary people will keep National Public Radio alive.
Okay.
It's the ordinary people that years from now, when people ask, well, what were you doing, you can point out and say, this is what I did.
Yes.
But yeah, it's going to get funkier before all this is ever resolved, and it may never be resolved in our lifetime. It may take our grandchildren to resolve it.
Yes.
But I take hope in resistance. I'm glad I live in Oregon as a state. I take hope in the resistance of the governor of Maine, who told Trump to take her to court. And he did, and they did, and she won that court battle.
Amazing. Thank you so much for reminding us what each one of us can do, and we can make a difference. Thank you so much.
All right. Take care, Cecil, and best of luck to you, and stay safe.
Okay. Thank you, Lenita, and thank you so much for all that you continue to do. You are listening to More Talk Radio here on your community radio station, 503-231-8187, and we have another call on the line. Nate, I forgot to hear that name, but we'll hear from them right now. Good morning, caller.
Hi, can you hear me okay?
Yes, your name and I
Josh?
Can hear you. Josh. Good morning, Josh.
Hey. Oh, I really appreciate. As I'm speaking into the phone, I'm hearing an echo of my own voice coming back at me, and I have my radio turned off, so I know it's not that.
Okay. Well. Thank you.
Oh, no.
Other callers have mentioned that too. I'm not sure, but
okay.
Hope you can speak and don't listen to yourself. But okay.
All right, I'll try. Thank you.
Yeah, I really appreciate everything that everyone has shared. I want to point out, I want to add some things that I don't hear shared as much. Unbeknownst to many, Gandhi, as legend has it, spent a lot of time studying an ancient Chinese book called The Art of War. And he used the principles of warfare in that tome, in that book, and translated them into how to conduct effective nonviolent revolutions. Mm-hmm. And the principles are largely the same. You know, you have to know your enemy. You have to understand, you know, resources and logistics and you know, morale and terrain and timing and like all of these different things, right?
Yes.
Of course, the agents of the ruling class, or the ARCs, as I like to call them, have done a marvelous job in every generation going back thousands of years of convincing us, you know, of giving us these fake versions of history, mm-hmm. you know, that, you know, saying that, oh, you know, Rosa Parks just got mad one day and put her foot down and that mm-hmm. was it, you know, mm-hmm. and all of this other nonsense about how change actually happens. So I'd really like to encourage everyone, first of all, to go get a copy of The Art of War, and think about it as Gandhi used it.
Okay.
Because we are the cavalry, uh-huh. as people keep saying.
Yeah.
And with that, I want to echo what Santiago had said and has said, other people have said previously, which is, you know, I myself, listening to Bernie Sanders and AOC, listening to some of their speeches, I am really of the opinion that they are wolves in sheep's clothing.
Yeah.
They don't seem to be saying anything very inspiring. It's all very vague. It's all very bland. It's, oh, you know, get out in the streets, you know, hands off Medicaid and Social Security. And it's like, yeah, those are fine things. But are they, how effective are they? Are they useful? And I think that, you know, true revolutionaries, people like Gandhi and Martin Luther King Jr. and so on, would say, no, absolutely not. Absolutely not. Protest is not an effective means of change the majority of the time. As Richard Nixon said, let them protest all they want, as long as they don't, you know, actually physically, you know, do anything to
change,
you know,
the structures of
what we're doing.
Right. Yeah.
So protest is just a pressure release valve. But if you want to do something with it, you could go out like Santiago is doing and you could distribute literature to people at protests and tell them, here's what you can actually do that will actually be more effective. And by the way, here's some history books you should read.
I wanted to respond to what you said about protesting, mm-hmm. and certainly yeah. it is a pressure release in part. It can be, but I think if it's seen as the end all and be all, that's when it becomes ineffective. Protest as part of a larger a plan of action become effective. So just, you know, standing up and marching in circles doesn't create change necessarily. But I think what it enables is one, people recognize that they are not alone, and two, create opportunity to create community and build communities of resistance. So I agree with you, just protesting is. But I think it in concert with other things that people can do, organizing people can do, is a means to change.
Yeah, there was an interesting interview, an article an interview with the author of an article. I want to say this was on Counterspin, mm-hmm. Which is also aired here on KBOO. If you go to Fair, FAIR.org,
mm-hmm.
And look for their podcast, which is separate from the printed the articles that they post. I believe that one of their recent ones a couple weeks ago was on 10 effective organizing principles.
Okay.
I'm trying to find my notes here, and I'm not okay. not finding them. And one of them is, you know, actually don't go big, go small. Start with people you know. Start with like one other person.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Someone you know. And get together with them and like have conversations, you know, keep your phones turned off when you're doing this, because we absolutely live in a police surveillance state, especially mm-hmm. now more than ever. And you know, start small. Don't try to have these big public things. That's kind of what comes at the end, right? Those big public things came right. out of, you know, months and years of organizing work.
Right.
It wasn't where they started. Right. And when they did march, they had very specific goals as part of the march, and that was a big part of what Gandhi, I think, talked about. You know, when he said be the change, he wasn't talking about personal lifestyle changes. He was talking about collective action, collective nonviolence action.
Indeed.
To do the things that we actually, so in some cases, so for example, the salt march, they were gathering their own salt.
Right.
The Boston Tea Party, Tom Hartman has a great article about what actually happened with the Boston Tea Party. They were actually protesting globalization and kind of like Walmart or Starbucks, coming into town and running out all of the small local businesses, all the small local tea shops and local economy, and replacing with this globalized corporation
right.
that obliterated
hey,
people's yeah. ability to be entrepreneurs, small businesses, self-sufficiency.
Right.
And when they organized the Boston Tea Party protest, everybody wore masks and covered their face. They always met in the dead of night. They kept their identities totally secret because they understood the British police had informants and secret police. And they knew what they were up against. And they had very, very strict criteria. Their point was to, you know, an equivalent today would be, let's say you were going, I think this is thinking way too small, but just as an allegory, you know, if you were talking about getting rid of Walmart, which again, I think this is thinking way too small, but just for the sake of illustrating, you know, you might block all of the, or Amazon, you know, you might block
sure.
all of the shipping and supply hubs, the seaports, the river ports, the airports, the train freight loading stations,
being strategic, yeah.
Being okay. very strategic, and in the case of the Boston Tea Party, they actually destroyed the cargo. But that was different because I think they only had a very small, finite number of ports
right.
hey, to
work
with.
Hey, Josh, we've...
Yeah,
running short on time. I have a couple of people else who wants to get in, but I appreciate what you're saying, and I have not read the Art of War, but I'll put it on my list. Thank you so much. Hey, you're listening to More Talk Radio on your community radio station, KBOOFM. Josh was just sharing some of the actions people have been doing in terms of revolutionary action. He mentioned the Salt March, and he mentioned the Boston Tea Party. While he's doing that, I want to mention something a little bit closer. It took place maybe 60 years ago, between May 2nd and on May 2nd to May 10th, over 1,000 school students in Birmingham, Alabama, initiated by an organizer, James Breville, went downtown because the adults had been arrested and children marched, and all those images, you know, those black and white pictures, images we see of children being hosed down by fire hose or attacked by dogs, took place because young people said, we've had enough. Hey, we can make a difference. Let's go to our next call, and I'm sorry you've been waiting so long, but Chad, are you still there?
Chaz, that's me.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, I have an idea for bringing a lot of people together, and it's inspired by the ideas of John Trudell, who talked about creative intelligence, and he's an indigenous person who passed on a while back, but mm-hmm. he still reverberates. And anyway, what I want to add to it is the idea of arting ourselves. So everybody can art themselves. They can take art that they like, and they can wear it, or they can make art, and they can make themselves into art. And when we art ourselves, then we find that other people are inspired in different ways. And it's definitely, I think it's a great way to bring people together. And the right wing can art themselves all they want to as well. That's the beauty of it. And we see each other's depth when we're arting ourselves. And so it's an idea of taking art away from the galleries and away from waiting for our show to show up, you know, 2 years down the line or whatever, and bring the art out into direct actions, as well as on our porches. We could have big, giant porch art galleries that go on for 2 miles in the city or longer, and, you know, show different people's art that we don't even know whose it is. Some creative ideas that are needed in this movement, it seems to me, and that's what I like to put out there.
I like that idea, and I also like the idea of thinking creatively. You know, we don't have to do things the way they've always been done, but be creative. Hey, thank you so much.
Right on. And the kids could all be wearing art. You know, well, most of the time they're wearing free ads for corporations. They could be wearing something that they really want to say.
Hey,
that might be a good way to get a lot of people to do it. Older people would like to
people.
Do it too,
Okay, see, I was even thinking of tattoo artists, but okay.
All of it is possible, of course. The tattoos, you know, just sticks with you a long time, but I mean, a lot of tattoo artists have a good art.
Right,
they'd like to share wider, and so I think that would make a big deal.
Hey, excellent. So, thank you so much.
I've been doing it around the town myself, and I've been having fun with it.
Oh, great. Well, keep doing that.
Yeah, just make a bike into an art, you know, art gallery type thing, and ride it around, man. Say what you really want to say, not the BS, not just to sell it for the, you know. Yeah.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. And you are listening to More Talk Radio, and the caller just reminded us, you know, ideas we can do, art ourselves, make a difference, let people know where you stand. Let's go to our next caller. Are you still there? Good morning.
Hello?
Yes, it's you.
Hey, I appreciate you so much, Cecil, for what you do and just your approach. What I wanted to talk about a little bit is the hope that we see in spring. Because all of the seeds that we saw below the snow, or we didn't see, that were buried, and we thought maybe they weren't even fertile, you know, they're all beyond sprouting, and they're putting out these beautiful flowers and fresh growth. You know, there's all of these fiddleheads and just amazing food that the earth just throws out in front of us. And there's just this amazing abundance that's all around us that nurtures us, and that's why we're able to survive. Okay, and I take a lot of hope from that. So just on the opposite side now, to bring things back to things are bad, they're terrible, and we need to be realistic about the future. Okay, I'm just going to go through a few short bullet points here, and then I'll tell you what I'm talking about. In the late mid to late 1800s, Kit Carson destroyed the Navajo crops and livestock in Canyon de Chelly. In the 1870s to 1880s, the U.S. government encouraged the mass slaughter of buffaloes. In the 1870s through the 1890s, the Black Hills reservations were given insufficient rations. In the 1890s, Wounded Knee was starved out before they were massacred. In 1887, the Dawes Act took property from indigenous people and forced starvation onto us. So these are just some bullet points. I asked Deep Seek about the history of the U.S. using starvation against Native American tribes. Mm. Because as you all know, Russell Means told us, we're all on the reservation now. Mm. And I want you guys to think long and hard about the first part of what I was talking about, because you had better have some seeds and know how to plant them and stay alive long enough to eat the food that is growing. Because historically, starvation is a tool in the playbook of authoritarians. And I just cited the ones in Native American immediate. I mean, I could go to the immediate ones where they're taking away the food currently.
Right.
And low-income heating and stopping the payments for commodities and forcing licensing for hunting and fishing. Right. You know, hunger is a tool of oppression.
Yes.
And if you want to maintain your liberty, please learn about how you can gather food. Learn about how you can wildcraft food. Maybe learn about the largest ever storage of acorns here in Oregon that was created by indigenous people for thousands of years. Mm. Or how we built clam beds that still stand today for thousands of years that actually changed the landscape so that we could have food. Because they're going to try and starve you.
Right.
That's why they're taking away the jobs. That's why they're taking away the benefits. That's why they're taking away the people who make food.
Indeed.
So please, please take this call to action seriously. If you want to keep hope alive, the real insurrection is planting a fruit tree.
Thank you so much, Salatio. Thank you. Thank you. And reminding us about hope. And you're listening to More Talk Radio on your community radio station, KBOO-FM. I'm Cecil Prescott. And Nate, do we have one last call? No. Okay. Okay. Well, thank you all so much for being a part of this program this morning and for reminding us of hope. Our last caller just reminded us that look around and see the hope in spring buried, maybe under the snow, under the cold. But in the spring, things begin to blossom. The earth opens up once more. And that is a call for all of us humans. It's a call to action. Whether it is on the campaign trail, whether it is on marching, whether it is on taking care of your family, your community, or your garden, there is so much we can do and so much we have to do in these age. But we do so without losing hope. Because hope sustains us, and it is the possibility of what we think the future can be. And we hold on to that hope because we want to live for the future. Gaining wisdom from the past, we hold on to the present, and we build a better world for all. this is some of the things that we have to do, whether it is May Day or whether it is not. Do not give up hope. Continue to resist. Continue to build community. Thank you all for participating. Thank you all for listening. Thank you all for our callers who recommended books and actions. So much we can do. Stay tuned to more on your community radio station, KBOO-FM. This has been More Talk Radio. I'm Cecil Prescott, and I will see you, well, I won't see you, but I'll speak with you next time. Thank you, Nate, our engineer this morning.
Listen and now, KBOO, Portland, 90.7 FM. You don't know.
Hello, my name is Jeff, and I host a show entitled A Matter of